I have Denise Cole speaking on the phone on behalf of the Labrador Land Protectors. Thank you for joining us today, Denise.
Thank you for inviting me.
Can you give us an update on the latest with the LLPs?
Yes. Well, this past week was a busy one in the court for us. We had three of our land protectors, also elders, James G. Learning and Elder Davis and Marjorie Flowers, were all in back in court after having been incarcerated and been released on conditions. So this was sort of their hearing day. So with Marjorie Flowers' hearing, the disclosure from Melcor was late coming, so they hadn't had it for more than 24 hours, Marjorie's lawyer, Mark Gucci. So he asked for a postponement, which was granted for September the 12th, will be the next time that Marjorie's in court for that particular those particular charges. And then Jim Learning, so he had decided to not contest the four allegations or breaches against him, three for breaching the injunction and then one for breaching his house arrest, even though it was misinformation that Melcor had accused him of being at Buscraft Falls' main gate, which he was not. But there was some misunderstanding on Mr. Learning's part about how it worked for what times of the day. And there's one day a week that he gets 3 hours, and he had misunderstood that that's a particular day as opposed to that he could choose what day those 3 hours were. So he didn't contest any of the charges against him. So the judge decided to find him guilty of those four charges, those four breaches, sentenced him to a 2-year suspended sentence, so not in jail. It's sort of he can still move about freely, and he had to agree to the undertaking that he'll stay at least a kilometer away from Muskrat Falls worksite, and that he will abide by the injunction that Melcor has in place. So he was a little bit disappointed about having to do that, but he also sees that now that he's not on house arrest, that he's able to be more effective in helping with the land protector movement and be more vocal than when he's either in jail or in on house arrest. And then Eldred Davis, who was representing himself, but he basically had a lawyer that he had consulted with. But he represented himself, and so his hearing through that, it became a very interesting development that he discussed about how he felt that the Melcor injunction itself should be challenged, and that it was, in his words, based on deceptions, based on misinformation, and the things that, as far as the sanctioning of the project for Muskrat Falls, and then how Melcor has proceeded to seem to be above the law, that needed to be challenged. And so he felt in all good conscience that he could not plead guilty to the breach that's being charged against him is walking on the North Spur in May as part of a sacred ceremony that was held. He didn't feel that should be considered an offense, that what he was doing was within his indigenous rights to do so, and that because this unjust injunction is in place, that's how Melcor gets this upper hand to continue to charge us as land protectors for doing what's a very noble act of protecting, land and water and life. So in that, we found out, Eldred said for himself, he was actually, that he wasn't aware of, that he could challenge the injunction as part of his defense. And so he has decided to do that. And we're all incredibly excited about this. This is the first time that we've ever had sort of what we felt is an ability to challenge this injunction. Up to this point, we've always been told it'd be incredibly expensive to have been challenged the injunction. So Eldred has 3 weeks. And he'll be back in court on October the 2nd, so 3 weeks to submit his evidence to challenge this injunction. And then on October the 2nd, they'll actually plan another hearing date. But this is to submit his written statement or his written evidence, challenge the injunction, and in doing so, challenging the charge that's against him. So that's really big. That's a big deal. So we're all going to be working incredibly hard now with Eldred to get that written evidence in place. It also means that Eldred has agreed that he needs to either heavily consult with a lawyer or have a lawyer. So we'll be discussing with him on how we can help him achieve that. We do have a lawyer now for the Labrador Land Protectors, but we don't want to make any assumptions of what Eldred would like to do. So all this happened yesterday, so we're all still sort of spinning our wheels and wrapping our head around just how exciting this news is that the judge is allowing us. Melcor's lawyer wasn't too happy about it, but we didn't expect that he would be. But this seems to be where another way that we have to wage this war that's happening on our lands and on our waters is also in the court.
I was going to ask you if you know if Eldred is planning on hiring a lawyer. If so, are there any fundraising plans in the works for paying for one?
Well, this is a piece that we need to talk with Eldred. Certainly the land protectors are we would love to have him join forces with the lawyer we already have. We already have fundraising initiatives that are ongoing, and now we can push them harder. You know, we have a fundraiser account online that people can donate money to. People can also contact us to our land protector site, our Facebook page, as well as our Twitter account, and make arrangements. We do have a fundraising subcommittee that's been working really hard, but this really sort of takes it up another notch to be able to look at what kind of funds we would need to mount a legal defense against the injunction as a part of his challenge. So really, it's, and now Eldred has, and if anyone in the media yesterday had alluded to that, he is willing and prepared to dip into his RRSP or his savings to do that. We're hoping that that doesn't need to happen, that we can find ways to work with Eldred. But again, we can't speak for Eldred. It's been less than 24 hours and all this has happened, or a little over 24 hours. So it's something that we're going to talk with him about, and then hopefully we can make announcements shortly thereafter and get people to start helping us with this, because it is a very significant. This could be a real game changer for the Labrador Land Protectors, because if we can get rid of this injunction, a lot of these charges against us will go with it.
What's the latest on Melissa Best?
Now, Melissa Best she was also, thank you actually for bringing that up. It has been an incredibly busy week. So Melissa had been over at the gate and had walked across from what they call the protest pad, we call it our peace camp, and had walked across the road because the copy of the injunction is actually on the gate, and you actually have to violate the injunction to go read the injunction, which is another problem that we see within this, how this whole system is working. So she had gone over and asked for a copy of this injunction. So then there were sheriffs there, and there was also RCMP there, and that she had gone speaking to them, and she's been very vocal on social media of saying that there's a lot of injustice that's happening, and her great concerns about the community of Mud Lake, which she is where she lives, and she's been a very strong vocal leader and spokesperson there, that as she continued to sort of push the subject about this injunction, and that by her, they've basically said by her going over there and asking for it and engaging in the conversation she did, that she broke the injunction, so that was warrant enough for them. The sheriffs have been told quite animately by Justice Murphy, the judge, that anybody who breaches the injunction in any way, shape, or form are to be arrested immediately. So that's exactly what happened, which was what we feel was certainly unnecessary and, again, heavy-handed, as all of these things have been. So she was in front of the judge. She has agreed to the undertaking, which gives her the restriction of having to stay away for at least a kilometer from the work site, except for on the peace camp, so on the area right across the road from the main gate that the court calls the protest pad. So that's where we are, and then she'll have to go back now to court as well to face charges against breaching the injunction.
So speaking of charges, so what charges is Marge up on again?
Marjorie has various charges around breaching the injunction, so breaking the original injunction, and then breaking her original undertaking as well. So that's where I think it can't be positive. So many different charges are going. When you talk about over, there's close to over 50 people who have charges against them now, and all of them gravitate around. So for Marjorie, it goes back from last fall to occupying the camp, so that would have been part of the breaches that happened there, and then different things that have happened since then, where she has been very active and passionate about protecting, and rightly so, her Indigenous values and beliefs, and protecting traditional foods, protecting the people around her, including, her loved ones and herself, that she has the right to speak up and take action when she sees injustice happening to her people and her culture and the land and the water.
Have you spoken with Eldred, Jim, or Marjorie since their court proceedings?
Only right directly after Corp, and then Jim and I are very close, so I've been talking to Jim a couple of times since then. I sort of wanted to give Eldred a little bit of time to sort of recoup, and then we could have a stronger conversation. I'm sure other land protectors have been talking with them. For myself, I work night shifts, so actually I'm back on my night shifts, so that's I've slept most of the day, so unfortunately it makes it harder for me to do the work sometimes that I want to be doing as part of the communications team for land protectors.
Right, yeah. Any idea how they're feeling about everything right now?
I know directly after court that certainly Marjorie spoke to feeling very tired and just drained and frustrated about this whole process, and having, whenever you have these things happen where you have to agree to conditions that you just feel are very unjust and it's wrong. So when these things happen, it's exhausting. And I say this from my own experiences of being involved in this. I have charges against me as well. But Marjorie did speak, and we did do, you can see it on our Labrador Land Protector live feed videos, where she spoke of just feeling so frustrated and tired, and where are her Indigenous leaders, and where are other people? Why aren't more people speaking up about this, and why aren't we taking more active action to protect our culture and our traditional foods? And being from Rigolette, she has an extra piece that she's very passionate about the protection of the traditional foods, and the fact that it seems to be that methylmercury can become a part of our food system, and it's justified by our own governments and by Nelcor in the name of profit and an energy project. Jim had said he was, you know, disappointed that he had to sort of give in, is how he would almost have put it. And we reminded him that him no longer sort of having to fight those particular charges and finally having some resolve to that court case gave him his freedom back in some ways to continue to work on a stronger level to help fight and help in the protection efforts. I mean, when he was on house arrest, he lives just outside of, you know, the community limits, so his internet is not that great, so he was really struggling to stay in touch with what was happening with the land protectors, and he was only allowed to leave the house for an hour a day, so he was missing meetings, and he was very, you know, frustrated about that. So I think he saw that by moving his energy into a different area, it's a win in many ways, because having Jim, he's a very strong player in the circle, so it's good to have him back at the meetings and those things. Eldred was very, all of us, I think, just felt this level of excitement, and Eldred was also, he was very, he had an energy and an enthusiasm about him where he said, I believe we can win this. This is finally a chance to speak to a greater level. Instead of just talking about charges, we could actually talk about the injunction. And how did an injunction get put in place, you know, what we believe to be in the midnight hours, pretty much, because as action was increasing on the Muskrat Falls gate last fall, suddenly this injunction came into play. Now, most injunctions, they're supposed to be, you know, it's a big deal to get an injunction given against individuals, and it's supposed to be a very thorough process where consultation happens and there's an understanding of both sides, and that it's justified to give any corporation or company or anyone, any individual, the ability to restrict other people's rights and freedoms. And that's what Nelcor has in this injunction to protect their project. So I think he is feeling, you know, what he expressed yesterday was excitement and determination about the next steps now that we finally are able to talk about the injunction and not just about charges against us.
So at this point in time, it doesn't seem like anybody really knows exactly how the injunction came about.
Well, there's a process, but what we see was it was very much a Nelcor and judge decision. It doesn't feel like there was due diligence given to why were individuals protesting to that level. You know, when anybody looks back at what happened last fall, people were in essence feeling, and the energy was fighting for your life and for the protection of food and culture for the next generations. And as Indigenous people, and also as non-Indigenous people who live downstream from this project, knowing that your food source is going to be compromised for generations, and having someone like a company or the government say that their energy project is more important than your life and your health and your well-being and your land and your water and your food source, it was critical that we had to take action. There was no other choice. Nobody would listen to us. The only thing that forced that marathon meeting in St. John's, where the Indigenous leaders got a methylmercury agreement with the provincial and federal government, was because of the action of people on the ground going to the gate, and the hunger strikers who went to Ottawa, and the brave warriors who occupied the camp at Muskrat Falls. The strong lesson that was told to us is that the only way that we can get movement or to be heard is to have to break the law and take action. That's a sad reality when we think of that we're in a country that claims to want a nation-to-nation relationship with Indigenous people, and who claim to want to apologize for the wrongs against Labrador Indigenous people. To force people to have to do that is undemocratic, and it's wrong on many levels and layers. You know, we're supposed to no longer be in a place of colonization, but yet that's exactly what happened. And I think the judge signing off on an injunction that told people you can't fight for your lives, or that you can't protect yourselves and the next generations, is wrong. I don't know anybody who can look you in the face and say, yeah, no, it was okay for them to do that, regardless if the project has been sanctioned or not. I think we have to ask a question, not just to ourselves, but to Indigenous leaders, to municipal leaders, federal and provincial government officials, as well as to the Crown and the courts, is when we talk about the United Nations Declaration for the Rights of Indigenous People, it says that the duty to consult goes throughout the life of a project. Most people you talk to about the Muskrat Falls Hydro Project will say, we had no idea that all this was happening. We had no idea about the methylmercury. We had no idea about the North Spur. We didn't know this is what was going to happen to our downstream community, that we were going to be under threat of being in a flood zone from now on. Because those things, most people didn't know them, how can government on any level say that the duty to consult was truly fulfilled? And then so many things have changed in this project. Laws have changed. My God, we've had a federal government complete changeover who has said, you know, we're going to bring back environmental legislation. We're going to commit to the United Nations Declaration for the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We're going to carry out all the calls to action from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission report. And then to not look at the Muskrat Falls Hydro Project as a direct infringement on Indigenous rights and way of life and culture, as well as lands and waters. So we have a big question here, and the question that I've been wanting to ask people, and I think they need to bring to their Indigenous governments, is, was the duty to consult fulfilled throughout the life of this project? So when the Harvard study came out, and when we learned more about the North Spur and the flood zone implications, reports came from the town of Happy Valley Goose Bay. Reports have come out from Dr. Stig Benander, as well as other university people within that field of geotechnical understanding. Reports have come out that have changed the information as we understand it from 2012 in the environmental assessment hearings. So that should have triggered the Crown to do more consultation. There should have been a new duty to consult. Because with the duty to consult, the second question that I ask is, if you were consulted, or depending on your answer, I guess, of did you feel that you were fully consulted, did you ever give free, prior, and informed consent as laid out in the United Nations Declaration for the Rights of Indigenous People? Because people will say, well, you know, I didn't know that I could have went to the panel hearings. I didn't know that I could say no to this project. Well, you should have known. And if you didn't know, then who's responsible for keeping that information from you? So that second question, if you have not given formed consent as Indigenous people impacted by this project, should this project have ever been sanctioned, and should it still be sanctioned now? Becomes a big question that it seems that no leaders want to talk about, and they have to talk about it because there's a responsibility. Like I said, not just from your federal and provincial government, but also your municipal government, as well as your Indigenous leaders. If they have not ensured that their people were properly consulted, then nobody was able to give informed consent.
Do you see this as kind of symbolic of the struggle against colonization?
Absolutely it is, because it's continued and perpetuated colonization, but now, again, in this name of evolution or development. You know, when they talk about that they're coming here to Labrador to apologize for the injustices that were done by colonization to residential schools, this becomes there's a very deep hurt that continues to happen to Indigenous people right across Canada. And certainly, you know, we feel it more acutely being here in Labrador, the injustices that continue to happen to us. When you are in a community in northern Labrador and you have to pay three times the amount for your food as anybody else does in anywhere else in Canada, when you are restricted by your housing, when you have limits on the type of education and health care that you can get. This happens also in southern Labrador, in other parts of Labrador. And then when you look at the Muskrat Falls Hydro Project and you see the downstream impacts where you have been dismissed, so your concerns about your food and your health and your well-being and the land that you have a responsibility to be a caretaker of, when all of your voices are completely dismissed in the name of economic advancement for an energy project, that is the same as colonization, as that is just as bad as when they first came into our communities. And actually, well, we were nomadic people. So when they first found us moving about the territory of Labrador and told us, we know better than you. So we're going to tell you, here's your community that you live in. We're going to tell you that your traditional knowledge is not as important as our colonized education. And so you're going to listen to us. Here's what's right and wrong. This is now going to be our land. So this is now going to be our river. This is what happened in colonization when contact began to happen in Labrador. I really beg to ask anyone to tell me, what is different right now? When the province of this, of the provincial government of Newfoundland could come in and tell people in 2012, even though most people in the environmental assessment presentations from Labrador stood up and said no to this project, that the Newfoundland government said, we know better than you, and we're going to do it anyway. It's the same thing. So I think that's, we have a real fight on our hands to break this colonial chain that's around us as Labradorians, to find our voices and to know that we are allowed to stand up, and actually we have a responsibility to the next generations to stand up and protect what is ours, what is, you know, our land and our water and the lives of the people we care about.
So what's next on the horizon?
I think we continue down this path, because we have to be aware that it might be Muskrat Falls today, it's going to be Gull Island or another river or resource in our backyards tomorrow. And if we don't find a way to get our autonomy back and fight back against this government that seems to want to dismiss us at all costs for their profit, we need to continue to unite. We're going to continue to fight them in the court systems. We're going to continue to fight them on the ground. We're going to continue to build solidarity with, you know, all communities right across Canada who are also struggling to protect their water, land, and lives. And we have a great solidarity team that's out of St. John's, out of Ottawa, and in Halifax. And we're all working together, and we're going to continue to work together, because what's happening is wrong. So wherever we have to take this fight to, that's where we'll continue to grow. You know, we need to grow the circle bigger, and everybody, no matter where you are, can be a part of that circle. We all can take very, you know, civil actions every day, you know, writing any of your MHAs or your mayor or your premier or your Indigenous government leader, calling their offices, emailing their offices, going to their offices if you can, and asking the question around this project, what are they doing to protect the lives downstream and the next generations? You know, what are they doing to protect the food of Rigolet and the people of Rigolet? What are they doing to protect the people in the flood zone and in the lower valley? And how are they going to protect Mud Lake so that it doesn't have to, you know, be evacuated or worse, go completely underwater and have lives lost? So we keep having to ask questions and force answers and then force action.
Thank you very much for your time today, Denise. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's us all working together, because really, you know, the colonial powers want us to believe that we're all in a triangle and somebody's a leader and somebody's a follower and this is how we have to work. But Indigenous values tell us that we have all operated in a circle, and when we get back to that circle, we're in the most powerful place that they can't break us once we're in that circle. So it's an open invitation to all.
Right on. Well, thank you very much, Denise.
Thanks so much, Morris. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.